Welcome to the Christmas special of The Hut Near the Bog. In this episode, myself and Sheila are joined by seven guests. The first born in 1936 and the last born in 2015 to discuss their Christmas memories and what makes Christmas special in Ireland. Hi Sheila, how's it going?
It's going well, James. How is it going for you?
Not too bad, no, not too bad at all. Happy Christmas.
And many happy returns, James. I hope it's a good one and that you have many of them.
Same to yourself. And I just wanted to say, I was thinking about the winter solstice. We're only a couple of days off it now. So have you been over to the Burrows or have you been near the hut? And how has it been going? Have you been able to see lovely sunrises?
Yeah, actually, the weather wasn't really conducive to sunrises. Quite cloudy here. However, I was pleasantly surprised this morning. I went over there for sunrise and I was over about 15 minutes before, and just the sun broke in the sky. I could see it coming up and it lit a whole trail in that ancient settlement. And as you know, we have been looking at it from the other side when it was setting in the west there. Myself and yourself were over there for the summer solstice. And again, it lit up the very same trail this morning. So I was really delighted I was over there to capture that. I've taken loads of photographs.
Lovely. Lovely, lovely. I'd say it's beautiful. I'm really jealous that I wasn't there with you to see it.
The early bird catches the worm, James.
Absolutely, I'm a different sort of creature altogether. Anyway, this is the Christmas special, and I'm really excited to record this episode with you because I think we're going to explore what an Irish Christmas is, and we're going to be joined by some guests, which is all the better to get some different perspectives on it. So, Sheila, I'd love to start by asking you, what is your earliest Christmas memory?
Well, my earliest Christmas memory is, I believe, 1956. I was thinking about this, which would have meant that I was 4.5 years old. In our house, our granny lived with us and she had three daughters who were our aunts in Dublin, and they always came home for Christmas. So therefore, that meant that there was a bit of improvising to be done. So I know that my mother put me in a cot that night, and I was really upset at the thoughts of being put in a cot, and I kicked up an awful fuss. And my mother said to me, well, if you don't go into the cot, Santa won't come. So I think that was the only way she got me into the cot. My other sister was across the way from me, and she was 3 years of age, and she was in a cot as well. And my sister Bernie, my mother had pulled out a big chest of drawers and used one of the drawers as a cot for her for the night. And my youngest sister, Anne, she was only a young baby, and she was in Moses' basket by the side of my mother and father's bed. So as you can imagine, the room was very congested. However, I went to sleep and I woke up and my sister Helen was saying, oh, Santa came. And down at the bottom of my cot was a beautiful big crawly doll with a pink dress. And I never forget it. I was so excited and I couldn't believe that Santa had come because I had caused such upset the evening before. And then she said to me, oh, look under the cot. And I got out of the cot, looked under the cot, and there was this huge, big Christmas stocking. And it seemed to be forever. The contents were so much. It was probably all in perspective, but I thought it was amazing. It must have taken me about an hour to go through it. I sat out on a little mat as there was lino on the floor at the time in the 50s. And I went through it and I was so, so excited. I never forget that Christmas morning. Just an amazing, it was magical and wonderful. And just, it was like all my Christmases had come together.
Sheila, that's a really lovely story. And I really got a sense of you as a 4 year old. And I know where I get my own bowelness from now.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. Thanks very much. So tell me about your first Christmas memory, James.
So I have a few different memories, but there's one that stands out to me in particular. And I think the reason it stands out to me so well is because the six of us were all still young enough that Santa was coming to all of us. And I remember the room where myself and Andrew slept, for some reason, all the presents were put down in that room. And I remember getting up really, really early, crack of dawn. And the six of us were all in there playing, and there was bikes and there was ties. There was all kinds of presents. Santa had brought us so many ties and presents. And I just remember the reason why it was because it was the thrill and excitement and the different, like, you know, it was different. It was a different experience. So that really stood out to me. And I remember another year, I think myself and Andrew must have been the only two still that Santa was coming for, but that we'd got a present that wasn't from Santa, but it was from yourself and Dad. And it was a go-kart. And Dad obviously didn't want us to take the go-kart out before he got up. So he blocked it into the carport with the car. And I think he thought he had us caught with that. But myself and Andrew were able to figure out a way out of bringing it. There was a side door and we were able to turn it on its side and get it out. So he wasn't too happy when he woke up to see us flying around the air on the go-kart before he got a chance to see us on it first. But some of my earliest memories anyway.
That's a brilliant story about the go-kart. I'd forget all of that, but it's just amazing what sticks with you. And you were always good at improvising, James.
indeed, absolutely. I suppose it's probably time to jump in and hear what some of our guests have to say and about their earliest memories. So just before we jump in, each of our guests will say their name and the year they were born. Before they tell us about their first Christmas memory. But I just think it's worth noting that our first guest was born in 1936 and our last guest was born in 2015. And I think that's going to really give us a sense throughout this episode of what an Irish Christmas is, the different perspectives of what Christmas is for people in Ireland. So let's jump into that. What do you think, Sheila?
I think that'd be brilliant, James.
How's it go, Brian? 14th of March, 1936. We'll be all here and we'll be expecting Christmas Eve, we'll be expecting Santa Claus.
Nice.
Yeah, and we'll be here and sure, my mother and my father, and I'm sure we were innocent of it, right? No, you didn't say no, you weren't called the young people today, like the way we were called it. And the next thing says, what's that? Oh, there's something going down the chimney.
Nice.
And going to the room, they see, and there was the chimney, and here, oh, that our little presents, that'd be in, all in it, what was in it. Then there could be a mouth organ, or there could be a face mask, or something like that. Something cheap, that's not a good afford, like.
Very small,
yeah. Yeah, we'd be delighted to get this. Next thing we go in, and we got Santa Claus after coming.
Right.
And we really thought, we did really thought.
So you thought someone would actually drop something down the chimney?
Yes, there's a double chimney here in this. It was in the room. It didn't come down, that was an open chimney. So it couldn't go down to open chimney.
Right.
So, yeah, that was Donnie's longest memory.
That was her earliest memory.
When we go back and think of it now.
The sack coming down the chimney.
How childish we were, like.
Ah, yeah,
no. You know.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the earliest memory. Very good.
That's the earliest memory, yeah.
Ah.
Michael Hochter, and was born on the 7th of the 12th, 47. Well, sure, my earliest Christmas memory would be, I suppose, probably I was 3 years of age, maybe. Three, you know, starting to believe in Santa Claus and all that sort of stuff. The one thing I do know that... yeah, it would be somewhere around that, my earliest Christmas memory. I started Santa Claus are coming to us. We used to get lovely presents. I remember getting a tricycle, one of those pedal cars and that sort of stuff. Like there was no little shabby presents. We'd always bought it with our rest of my brother Jack, and that we always get a nice Christmas box. And then, of course, granny, Lord have mercy, my grandmother, my mother's mother and that, and there'll be presents coming from the aunts.
My name is now Paula Persword. When I was born, I was Paula O'Donoghue. Born in 1978 in Galway Regional, and my parents were living in North Clare, and they're still there in North Clare. Yeah, well, I was thinking about this today. Like, there are so many memories that kind of blend into one, you know. So one of my earliest Christmas memories was, of course, revolving around Santa Claus, you know, and how exciting that was for, I suppose, everyone when we were small, and still is. But I remember myself and my brother Steve, who was just a year older than me, and we were kind of, I suppose, partners in crime around that time. And Steve would always be keen to get up really early, like probably about 3 a.m., you know. And I was always a bit more cautious because, you know, I had this in my head that, like, if we see Santa in the act, we're doomed, like, you know, there won't be presents left and we'll be in big trouble. And I was just a bit more cautious, whereas Steve was a bit more ballsy and ready to take a risk, you know. But I remember being at our sitting room door in Clare and him saying, come on, come on, it'll be grand. Like, he's definitely been at this stage. And I'm like, no, no, we should just wait another while just in case. And we're standing there freezing in our pajamas and our nightdress or whatever. And in the end, anyway, I sent him in first to check, you know, were the presents there, because I thought, push comes to shove, if Santa sees him and not me, like, I should be safe with my presents. But, you know, Steve would get it, and he was the keen one, so I thought that was fair enough to send him in first.
My name is Sarah Shortall, and I was born on the 21st of May 1995. It's definitely one of my earliest Christmas memories, at least. But it was when I was a child, and I think we were living in the pub at the time. So we kind of woke up early, and I remember my brother Andrew used to always be the first person up, and he'd be waiting in the hall for the rest of us to get up. He wouldn't be allowed to wake us, but we'd all be up nearly by, I suppose, by seven anyway. We'd be up really early. And we went racing downstairs, and there was this rocking horse for me that it was like kind of, well, I, at the time I thought it was very realistic. It was like a real horse. You know, I was so excited. And Samantha got a child's motorbike. It was just that real excitement around Santa having come the night before, and yeah, just being so delighted with the whole day, really.
My name is Samantha Shortall. I was born on the 8th of June, 1997. Funnily enough, actually, Sheila, my first one would be the same as Sarah's. Yeah, I think specifically that Christmas, for some reason, really sticks out in my mind as well. I think it was kind of, you know, the rocking horse and the motorbike were two quite grand presents to be receiving at that age. And I remember, like, we were both just absolutely beaming, because the rocking horse was, for a small child, was huge. And as Sarah said, it was quite realistic, and my motorbike was electric, and I loved just, you know, hopping on and driving off. Yeah, and we recently actually watched a video when I was home recently of that Christmas as well, which probably is why it's so clear in my mind.
Margaret Conroy, born 1974, and then we have Ellie
Kate Conroy,
2015. It's probably when I was about four. And I remember I was sharing my bedroom with my brother Brian, and I remember waking up Christmas morning, and Santa had brought me a little pram and a little mosaic, and it was in our room. And I just remember the excitement, and that's probably the earliest Christmas that I actually remember. You know, I suppose it was all about the presents back then.
I remember one Christmas I remember Christmas, and I got a scooter and a little Ayla doll.
Oh, lovely. So is that your earliest memory of Christmas, Ellie?
Yeah, it was when I was three.
Oh, you know, I really love those first Christmas memories, and I love the variety listening to the first being from someone born in 1936 and the last being from someone born in 2015. What did you think,
Yeah,
Sheila?
I really, really enjoyed them, James. It shows you the magic of Christmas and also the anticipation and the excitement and in one sense, a little bit of fear as well, you know, afraid that Santa would catch in the act or afraid that Santa might come. So I think overall, they're just beautiful.
Absolutely. And I believe you were talking to your Auntie Sheila recently. What year was she born in, Sheila?
She was born around 1930. I haven't the exact year, but around that time.
So we're going even earlier now. And she talks about Christmas in the 1930s, I believe. She was relaying her experiences to you. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, she grew up, there was a family of 13 of them in it. And as she says, a house full of children. She said they got no treats and nobody else got treats either. So Christmas was really special. And she said what differentiated Christmas and any other day was there was a turkey, there was a cake, and there was lemonade, and they were brought into the sitting room and the dinner was put on the table and it was just amazing dinner. They saw it as an amazing dinner. And she said by the time the dinner was over, there wouldn't be one scrap of meat left on the turkey. She said it's all was left was the bones. She said the bones were lucky to be left. So you can understand how it was so amazing for them. And that was so important. And she said the amazing thing was the butcher gave you the turkey as a goodwill gesture for your custom during the year. The grocer gave you the cake, again, as a goodwill gesture. And they usually got a couple of bottles of lemonade from different pubs. Now, maybe that was because her father was a sergeant in the guards or whatever. I don't know. But they got a few bottles of lemonade and that made their Christmas. It was amazing. Now, the other little memory she told me was that she woke up on Christmas morning. She had been awake during the night and there was a box on her side with a lovely little doll in it. And when she woke Christmas morning, Agnes, who was sleeping with her, had woke before her and she had taken the doll out of the box and put in a little wind-up tie. So nobody, there was no names on the presents, so whoever got first claimed the prize. So that was her memory of that was her really big memory of Christmas. And I think again it shows the childhood and the magic and the mystery of it all.
Absolutely. And really, I love the idea that that it was very much, again, I think we've explored this before in the podcast in earlier episodes, but the idea of community, the idea that it was a communal thing where people helped each other out in order to bring Christmas together. And it's funny now when we go into the next aspect of the episode with our guests, where we hear about their various experiences. The first one is very much resonates with that, but I think they all resonate in one way or another. So shall we jump in and have a listen
yes,
to those?
Yes, please do, James.
So you wear geese throughout the
year? We often had 12 and maybe 14 geese at that time. And there'd be a certain amount of them we came with them here, coming up a month before Christmas. And I used to bring in a few pounds.
You gambled?
Gambled, say, there'd be nine at a table. And maybe a pound a man. Right. With a lot of money.
Yes.
That was £9. But generally, it would be roughly, in my time, to be half crown.
Right.
That'd be a half crown a pound. Yes. A pound and a half crown for a goose.
Right. A pound and a half crown for a goose. Yeah. You'd be gambling or selling it?
No, we'd gamble in the house here.
Who would be
the neighbours, anyone that gambles, plays cards. And
oh, it'd be cards, it'd be up for cards.
Up for cards, card game.
Right.
Yeah, that's
I know exactly. So what you do is you charge, would it be as a prize and people have to pay in, is that correct?
Yeah, pay in and the money would be collected and handed to my mother. The winner then...
Win the goose,
that's
and
it.
And we'd play, what, 9 or 10 games, would it?
We'd play for 4 or 5 to 1 night.
Oh, yeah. But there'll be one goose per game, is that right?
One, yes, exactly.
Oh, very good.
One, or then of late years, turkey. But turkeys, the same thing, and there'll be one turkey, one prize, that's it.
Oh.
And you haven't paid for four or five turkeys in one night.
Very good.
Yeah.
So that's how you made a bit of extra money for Christmas.
And then there'll be people that be at the table, and man, money was scarce, like, and they win the turkey. And they put the turkey up again. They pop the turkey, and they'd all play for him again. So he had money going home.
Right.
Well, there would be decorations, yes.
What kind of decorations were there?
Well, everyone had a Christmas tree. Yeah, well, we used to go to the bog and...
You'd cut it down in the bog?
We used to get it in the bog.
Yes.
Anywhere at that time, there was an awful lot of... near every bog, there was a couple of trees of... Dale trees.
Dale.
And they produced an awful lot of plants. Yeah. Now, if you go over sometime from the priest's bush, and if you want to see... thousands over there.
Oh yeah, we took one there one year for Christmas.
Yes, that's lovely ones. We've gone there for years getting there, like, you know.
You go down to the priest's bush, would you?
Yeah, we're going to
Derrylahan.
You're going to Derrylahan, yeah.
Would there be any?
Oh, there would.
What else would be there?
Holly.
Holly, all around the house.
Everyone pop holly. And I was there. No one.
It's hard to get holly now, though, isn't it?
But it was hard to get at that time, but you went and looked for it and you got it.
You got it one way or another.
Oh my God, did you ever got holly had to be got. And then it had to be put abroad in the house offices as well.
Yes.
Because all this over the doors, the calf houses, the horse stables, there was all this holly put up there as well.
The decorations wouldn't be as it is today, like, but still the big decoration would be the holly, the buried holly had to be got. And they were very careful in them days because if you saw a holly tree with a lot of berries on it in the month of, say, November, October, November, around that time, it meant it was going to be the predictions was it was going to be a hard Christmas. Well, not a hard Christmas, but it was going to be, well, a wintry Christmas and snow and all that. And the birds would take the berries. They actually would clean trees overnight and they take them, you see, they hoard them and that, you know, they go into hibernation, right? And they'd bring their food with them. So people would go early and cut the buried holly because that was... fierce important, like, for Christmas. One of the great important things of Christmas was the holly decorating. And they cut the holly early and they buried it in the ground, like, and they'd dig a little hole and stick it down the ground and try to be clean it. And that would keep the holly and the berries would be perfect for Christmas when they pull it up out of the ground in and put it here and there around the house and all that. And of course, another was then there was the candle, Christmas candle that be lit in the window on Christmas Eve. And that was an invitation to Christ himself. It was inviting them that, you know, it was a recognition of his presence, you know.
Oh, Christmas Day is always the best mass. Definitely be the Christmas hymns to be sung and oh, definitely.
Why was it the best mass?
It was a great mass because it was real Christmas.
Oh, it was lovely. The Christmas spirit.
It was the real Christmas carols sung and all that, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, because in other words, it was mass made Christmas.
It was what?
It was mass made Christmas.
Oh, it was mass that made Christmas?
Yes.
Really?
No, that's my opinion of it, anyway.
See, do you think Mass was the big thing that really, that you knew it was Christmas Day? That's what made it different from every other day?
I did, yeah.
And what, because the Mass was so, there was Christmas carols
yeah,
and...
Yeah, and the choir and the Christmas carols sung and all that, yeah.
And did the priest, was he anyway different, the priest? Was the sermon different?
No, he'd, the priest had son and daughter and he'd join in the choir. Yeah.
That was in the old church in Rackhaven, was it?
The old church in Rackhaven, yeah.
Then on Christmas Day morning, we usually used to go to Mass in Tuvahara Church, which is the closest kind of, it's a very small church locally at home. And yeah, kind of, you know, being torn away from the presents and the wrapping paper and, you know, making yourself look half decent to go up to Christmas morning Mass. But again, like, I remember there was this really young priest, and I suppose he would have been considered very modern at the time, but he did a lovely thing. And I think at this stage, I was probably a bit too old and a bit too cool for Santa. But on the altar on Christmas morning, he brought on the presents that Santa had brought him, like, and he opened up the presents on the altar so that the children could see what he'd got, and he hadn't had a chance to open them, and he had to fly out the door to Mass. And again, I thought that was so lovely. It's sort of lovely when everyone kind of jumps on board with the Santa industry. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, sure, you know, the Christmas carols and all that, lovely, you know, all this, the Christmas carols and the singing. And of course, another thing that was special about Christmas too, we're all great churchgoers, or we still are, like, it's something we grew up with, and it's very important to me, going to Mass, and that is very important. It's a part of my life, but I haven't said that, I haven't gone for the last 8 months to Mass. I haven't said that, I still get Mass on a Sunday, like, on the television or wherever. But, Mass in them days was very special because you had none of this this Saturday Eve Mass at 7:30 or 8 o'clock for Saturday Eve, and this vigil Mass, as they call it. And you just had the Sunday Masses, like, right? And of course, the one big occasion was the only one Mass was Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve. And we all used to look forward to going to that, just to be lovely. And of course, my parents, Lord rest them, they always went to Borough Mass, was their Mass, the little car here, and went to Borough Mass every Sunday, and then into Midnight Mass then for Christmas Eve. And Midnight Mass in them days was midnight, like, it started at 12 o'clock at night. Might be in there for 11:30, and the Borough Choir, remember, were fantastic choir. They listened to them for hours.
So, Ellie, do you want to tell me about Christmas and what it means to you? What's Christmas all about for Ellie?
Christmas trees, baubles, all on everything, all Santa Claus presents, all that.
And what else? Anything else Christmas is about?
It's all about, like, having time with your family and playing and all the toys you get from Santa.
Firstly, like, we were living in a village, in the pub there, and every Christmas, Santa would come, like, and walk, you know, on the road, like, outside the pub, and he'd ring a bell, and you know, all the children and everything, like, you know, this would be probably 7-8 o'clock at night, but it was a big thing in a scheme. And he'd be ringing a bell, going from house to house. And I remember Samantha accused him of robbing it from school, because it looked very similar, at least, to the the bell that our principal used to ring when it was, you know, time to go home or time to go out to yard or whatever. So Samantha accused him of robbing it from school, and yeah, he didn't really know how to respond. But also, in terms of the pub, we used to have kind of Christmas parties in the pub, and like, you know, Santa would come to that as well. And yeah, I remember just, you know, you'd be all dressed up and jumping around the place and dancing, and he'd kind of give out, like, small, you know, like, say, Barbies and things like that to us in the lead up to Christmas as well. So in terms of the pub and, like, in the village and everything, we were really lucky. And yeah, I remember, like, when he used to come to the pub when you'd go back to school, like, the older children would be asking, you know, if you knew him, or how come how come he came to your, you know, your house, basically.
Yeah, I love jingle bells. I like you wish you Merry Christmas. And I love Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows if you're awake. He knows if you'll be bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. Hey, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not shout, cause I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Good girl.
My favorite thing about Christmas is, I think, also the Christmas songs and kind of the atmosphere that they create and everything as well. And I think I would be quite, you know, I have it's another one of my earlier memories, but I remember when I was small and, you know, you're all cozy in the sitting room, and I was obviously very small. I was sitting up on Dad's lap, and we used to be, you know, we'd turn on the music channel and we'd be listening to the songs. And I remember sitting up there listening to Fairy Tale of New York, and Dad was telling me the whole story of, you know, of the band or whatever. And, you know, you're just so like entranced by everything, and it really feels so magical. So, yeah, I think that, you know, the songs are always so emotive, I suppose. And, you know, they always just bring back the joy that you felt even, you know, back when you were a child. So
we kind of knew what to expect, or we hoped what we'd get. But it was so lovely to see them like that, you know, and to see the, like, you know, the crumbs of the mince pie and like the half drank bottle of Guinness, you know, that he couldn't drink at all because he was in such a rush and he'd to fly off, but he was thrilled with, you know, a big bite out of the mince pie and a gulp of the Guinness, and off he'd go again. And that was so magical to see, like the crumbs were really magical. And then the scribbled note as well, like hardly time to write anything, but just like a scribbled note to say, like, you know, Happy Christmas and thanks a million for the mince pie. And then like staying up, you know, opening the presents and staying up. And then like, I think the den would come on at about, I don't know, maybe 6 a.m. or something. We'd been up for a good while at that stage now, and there was wrapping paper all over the sitting room. So the den would come on at 6 and we'd be kind of sleepy, I suppose, and watching that and playing with our presents or whatever. And then, you know, Mum and Dad would get up at a more reasonable hour of 7:30 or 8 o'clock or whatever it was, and shoo us out the door to Mass, and on we'd go with our Christmas Day, you know. But I think they're probably like the earliest memories, you know. And I think it was kind of that was Christmas morning, like for my, you know, Santa years. It was that kind of early start, and just the excitement and the pure magic of it, like, you know, it was just brilliant.
And what about you? What did you get last Christmas?
I got a changing station, roller skates. I got Mr. Fredgenson, everything. Even seeing one and Elsa dolls.
Oh, wow. And do you think Santa is watching all year to make sure you're a good girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is he?
Mm-hmm.
And do you love your Christmas dinner?
Yeah, like Christmas pudding and all
that. Oh,
wow.
So delicious. And what else do you have? You love pudding, do you? What else do you love about Christmas?
Mama says Christmas turkey.
Christmas turkey. Do you like the turkey? You do.
Yeah.
Do you think
I love
it's tasty?
Turkey.
Yeah, good girl. And how are you spending Christmas this year, Ellie?
We're going to put the tree near the window.
Lovely. And what else are you going to do?
We might make some snowmen of the snow outside, and we might get up in the middle of the night and to open the presents like we used to do last Christmas.
Good girl. And what do you leave out for Santa?
We usually leave out a carrot and a cookie and a glass of milk.
Yeah, I suppose one that springs to mind would be
this Christmas, and I was quite small at the time as well, I had asked for a doll's house. And Mum kept saying leading up to Christmas, you know, I don't particularly remember the lead up, but I remember her telling me that I was, you know, being quite bold a few days before Christmas. And she said, Santi's not going to be bringing you any dollhouse now. He's going to be bringing you coal because you're being bold. And on on Christmas morning, she said she remembers really clearly me waking up and coming up to the living room and seeing my doll's house. And then, you know, I think I opened the roof of the doll's house and there was just a few lumps of coal in the roof of the doll's house. And Mom says she remembers clearly my eyes bulging out of my head and just looking up at her. And the fright I got from actually getting coal inside my doll's house.
It's so dark at that time of year, you know, and I know, like, it gets darker over here in the UK earlier than it does in Ireland, but it's that darkness, like, and especially in rural Ireland, and just the twinkly lights, you know, it's just so, like, that I think adds to it, you know. Of course Santa Claus is the big thing, but, you know, I also remember it must have been like a carol concert, or maybe we were doing a little nativity play or something like that, but I was very young, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 or something like that. And I really remember the tinsel halo around my head, you know, and it was really itchy, but I loved wearing it because it meant I was an angel and I had, I suppose, some kind of bed sheet on me or whatever, wrapped up with a bit of tinsel as well. And holding Mam's hand, you know, as we were coming out of the church. And I remember how dark everything was, but there was still, I don't know, like the little twinkles and the little of the Christmas lights and the bubble of excitement from all the children and the adults as well.
I put myself 10 years of age at this day.
So you're 46, just after the war.
Yeah. Yeah, we go when we'd hurling, that was it. Then a whole group of us would get together, and it was a social thing. I mean, we do it every day anyway. You know,
it was just another thing anyway.
You weren't hanging around under the mammy's and daddy's seat, like.
Oh, you were out the door.
Yeah, and then in the evening, the whole, and then we'd fall back upon the pitch and toss.
In the evening?
Yeah.
So you'd be hurling after the mass in the morning?
Yes, yes.
How many there? Would there be
12, 14.
14, 7 aside.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, maybe 8 aside, yeah.
How many hours would you be hurling for?
Would hurl for maybe 4 hours.
4 hours.
And still you'd be as fresh.
You'd still be going.
And now they're dying after 15 minutes.
Well, so when you're young, like, you just stayed at home for Christmas, like, and Christmas night and that. And of course, in them days, it was kind of a long night because there was no television or anything like that, you know. When you're little lads, television only got going in the early 60s, like. At that stage, we were into teenagers, you know. But along tour or childhood days, like along 7, 8, 9, 10, along there, there was nothing on Christmas night, like, other than just stay at home. Everybody stayed at home as a family. And usually the Christmas candle would be lit again on Christmas night, you know. And then, as I said, Christmas, Stephen's Day, then you'd probably go, as I said, you know, people maybe come in Christmas Eve or Stephen's Night, wherever people are believing, or some of the family you come, like, maybe you go to, usually, yeah, Stephen's Night, as I think of it, my mother, Lord have mercy, we'd all go over to visit her mother, which was my grandmother, like, in that, of a Christmas, of a Stevens's night, like, that's when we were kiddies.
Well, Stevens would play cards, we'd play cards here, and that was it.
And would people come around, or just the family?
Oh, the people come around, yeah.
On Christmas night?
Christmas lights, yeah.
And would you
have that was all the stuff.
Would there be alcohol at all, no? Back in those days.
Did they what?
Would there be alcohol, drinks?
Oh, Lord, no, no.
No drinks?
Oh, no. A cup of tea and that was it.
And would your parents, would they have a drink?
Oh, no.
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 No one drink.
No, there was no thing as... No. That's why I say that as kind of the years gone, yeah, people got more wealthier and... Meant they got more stouter, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. But they drink. Oh. So there was no drink at all, not even for your parents?
No.
That's mad, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, and then when we got getting that bit older and got on towards our teens and that, and I suppose it'd be around 12, 13 or 14 or whatever, of course you look forward to... St. Stephen's Day, it's known in England as Boxing Day, but St. Stephen's Day, the day after Christmas, and you go hunting the wren. And hunting the wren was mainly, you're after money. So you go around to neighbours' doors and you'd be dressed up, you'd have old funny clothes in you, and you'd rap on the door and some of the neighbours come up and you just burst into song the minute you open the door. And you get something, you might get, you better get money or get sweets, so you get something anyway. Then you go on to the next neighbour house. And all she'd have is a couple of verses of one old song. But the one old song done every place because nobody knew the difference that she were singing the same one down the road, you know. And as I said, it was a couple of verses and off you go again.
You don't really appreciate it until it's kind of, you're told you can't, you know, go home. And then it gets a bit nostalgic because it's hard, I suppose, thinking about not being with family on Christmas or being a bit alone. It feels a bit empty. And you think about then, like, what I suppose what it really means. And it's not about any of the present giving and the any of that. That's not kind of what's upsetting. It's not being around, you know, your family and the people you love. So I suppose we'll have to wait and see for me really what's going to happen. But yeah, I potentially will be staying here in London.
Oh, I really loved all those different little memories about each of our guests' Christmases. Just really lovely and such a different perspective.
Yes, James, and do you know something that got me thinking about my Christmas memories and even the lead up to Christmas? And my mother was always baking cakes and plum puddings, and she would steep the fruit, as in raisins, sultanas and currants, and she'd steep them in rum and brandy. Now, the smell of the rum and brandy, I thought was amazing because I never smelt that smell only at Christmas because there was never alcohol in our house. And I found it just amazing. And then she had to get the cooker. It was a range. She had to make sure that that was at a consistent temperature because if it wasn't, the fruit would fall down to the bottom and the Christmas cake would be destroyed. So she had to be really careful, and it was... attention to detail was the key thing, having the temperature right. And guess what? One time she made this beautiful plum pudding, and we couldn't wait to get the plum pudding on Christmas Day because we were smelling it when it was baking and we were counting down the days. But anyway, my mother would seal it and she'd really put it away, and she put it up on top of a wardrobe upstairs one time, and you wouldn't believe it, a mouse got at it. And my mother was distraught because she was one of these people who couldn't bear waste, and the plum pudding was gone. Obviously not at all, but it had to be disposed of. And she had to start all over again making the Christmas pudding. So it just shows you how things were done and the preparation and cleaning the house. And the other thing was we used to have sub decorations. Obviously the holly and the ivy were big, but we also used to get this crepe paper, and we used to put say, a red piece of crepe paper with a yellow piece of crepe paper, and we'd make them almost like a plait. And they were our decorations, homemade decorations. So they were some of the Christmas memories. And the other thing I think that's important to say is that postman, we looked out for the postman all the time, because there was so much post, because my mother had such a large family and they all sent her a Christmas card, because they'd hardly be in contact all year because there was no way of contacting apart from letter. So that was just really good from the point of view. And this aunt of my mother's used to send us a tin of USA biscuits. Now, we never saw anything like the selection of biscuits that was in that USA tin. And Mammy again would hide it, because otherwise the biscuits would all be eaten before Christmas. So there are some of my memories, James.
Lovely, lovely. And did you put a candle in the window?
Oh yeah, we did. We always put a candle in the window. And it was a log. First of all, you had a log and you scooped out a little piece that the candle would fit into. And it was a Christmas log. And that was always in the window. Yeah, it was meant to guide the Christ child to the stable, or to show that there was room in our house for Mary, Joseph and baby Jesus.
That's lovely. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. Did you have the Wren boys or the Mummers growing up?
No, we did have the Wren boys, yeah, we did, but we never really got involved in them. But the one thing for me about Christmas as well that I feel I haven't heard it mentioned was crib. I used just love to go to that crib and reflect as a child. It's amazing the little things that matter to you, but going to that crib on Christmas Day and reflecting for me was just absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. And it's beautiful. And, you know, I got a real sense of the community from our guests in the last piece, and the coming together and how they all helped one another out, even down to, like, you know, gambling the geese, and other people would then re-gamble it and go home with a few pound in their pocket for Christmas, and then that Saki and the family would have the money together then for their Christmas. And it's just really lovely. And I think the Wren boys, the candle in the window, the sense of community, I think they're really something that are defining characteristics, I think, of a Christmas in Ireland. And yeah, there's a lot of traditions as well. And yeah, that's something, yeah, I think.
And my mother always reared turkeys as well, so that she'd have that little bit extra for Christmas. And she always said the bronze turkeys were so much nicer. And they all had to be plucked, and obviously they had to be killed at Christmas and then plucked. And we were part of that plucking. And my mother would be very careful, and she said we couldn't tear the skin. And your hands would be really cold plucking, because obviously it had to be in a very cold environment. So there was lots of preparation for Christmas. It wasn't all just press button. There was a lot of work went into Christmas in those times. And also, not alone did a lot of work go in, but when you think that there was no such thing as being able to turn the temperature to 180 and off you go. You had to prepare the range and everything else, and have your wood and your turf or your coal or whatever all in order to make sure that that Christmas dinner was cooked to perfection.
Absolutely. No, it was really lovely, and different times indeed. And you know what? I two of our guests, Paula Persaud, or originally Paula O'Donoghue, and Samantha Shortall, are both based in the UK, and they gave us their perspective on what they think makes Christmas different in Ireland from other places. So should we have a listen to that?
Yes, please. I'd love to listen to it.
Yeah, like, there is definitely a few differences. Like, I suppose in this house there aren't really differences, because I suppose, like, in every house, you know, the parents or whatever will bring their own traditions to it and their own kind of whatever they grew up with. So myself and Greg would have blended that, and so it's a kind of a Christmas very similar to what I had at home when I was growing up. But Definitely, like, there is a few differences. I think, like, one of the main things I've noticed is that Christmas trees tend to go up a lot earlier here than they do at home. And again, it's quite possible that this is the case in Ireland now, and I've just kind of missed it because I've been away for so long. But, like, December the 1st would be the standard day to get your tree up here. I know, like, definitely when we were growing up, our tree would go up, like, you know, the 17th or 18th of December, I'd say, at the earliest, and that was with a lot of nagging and persuasion to mum and dad, and kind of the caveat being that we had to clean the house and make sure it was clean before any decorations went up. But definitely, I think the kind of given day to put it up here would be December the 1st. But then it's taken down really early. So, like, I think typically it would be taken down on January the 1st or just after. Lots of people would take it down before then, but I always try to leave the tree up until after the 6th of January. I'm still trying to explain
Little Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Still trying to explain to Greg that it is Nollaig na Mban and what that means.
Exactly.
But he's thinking every day is Nollaig na Mban here, so he's not really listening to me. But that, you know, leaving the tree up for the full Christmas period. I have my mam's voice ringing in my head saying, you know, Christmas only starts on Christmas Eve and it goes on. And, you know, she's always saying everyone stops playing Christmas music on St. Stephen's Day, you know, or after St. Stephen's Day, and it's still Christmas, and we're playing Christmas music all through December, and we stop playing it just as it starts, you know. So
I know, sure. it nearly starts in November, doesn't it?
It does, really. Yeah, it does. And, like, in a way, I love the build up. I do love the build up, but I think as well, like, you know, it's nice to, I suppose, sort of, if you put your tree up that early, you're kind of anxious to get it down as well, because it's, you know, it's taking up space or whatever. But I do like to leave it up until the 6th. I'm sure, like, the neighbours here probably think that I just can't be bothered taking it down. But I do like to have it up. And I think the other thing, and again, it might be, like, you know, it might be something that happens a lot in the countryside in England, and I've just kind of missed it. But Greg often remarks when we're home about the lights in the window at home. You know, a lot of people would put the candles in the window at Christmas time, the little electric candles or the real candles or whatever. And I remember my grandmother next door used to, on Christmas Eve, like, she'd have all of the curtains in her front windows wide open and the big lights on, and her house would literally just be kind of lit up, you know. She'd have the candle in the living room window where she was burning on Christmas Eve and on New Year's Eve, and it would really, you know, all the houses on our road did it. They'd all have the lights on and the candles burning on Christmas Eve, but probably throughout the Christmas period. But it's not really something, the candles in the window here aren't really something that I've noticed at all, actually. In fact, I don't think I've noticed it in any house. I live in a city here, so as I say, it might be that in the countryside, you know, that's a done thing, but I haven't noticed it. Definitely, I remember, like, driving up to Sligo to see my other granny up in Sligo, and it was so lovely just, like, you know, noticing all these houses with the candles in the window, and then getting closer to Granny's house and noticing their house all lit up as well. It was really nice. But yeah, that's kind of not really done here as far as I know. And then obviously there is the I think the difference in vocab, like, Santa would be, I think, considered kind of an Americanism here. You know, it's Father Christmas is the English way of saying it. Now, definitely lots of children will say Santa, but it is kind of, I think, considered an Americanism from watching all the movies or whatever. And then the mummers, that's a real Irish tradition, I think. So we wouldn't have anything like that over here on St. Stephen's Day or Boxing Day, as they call it here. But yeah, that's really, I think, the differences that I've noticed anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like in Ireland, I feel like the community, well, I suppose for one thing, you know, Ireland is quite it's quite a traditional place in many ways, and we all kind of celebrate Christmas the same, mostly anyway. And I think, you know, there's a massive sense of community, and everyone coming together, and I feel most people kind of celebrate it in the same way, in the sense that, you know, a lot of people would go to Mass on Christmas Eve, quite late on Christmas Eve, or, you know, Mass the next morning. And, you know, for us growing up as well, like, it was about seeing your friends at Mass and kind of comparing who got what from Santi and that kind of thing. And I think that's kind of the whole Irish Christmas that sticks out in my mind. And, you know, going to see the crib when the crib was put up in the village and all that kind of thing, that was quite a big event. And so I think, you know, abroad, it's definitely different. And I don't get the same kind of warm feelings a lot of the time. It feels slightly more empty and slightly more commercialized to me here. And I don't know if that's as well because, you know, I'm not around family and that kind of thing. But I think there definitely is more of a sense of family and community in an Irish Christmas. And there's just a lot of love and appreciation as well, I feel. So yeah, that's what I definitely think is different about an Irish Christmas.
Really got a sense of what they think makes Christmas different, and really the sense of community from Samantha, and then the Paula talking again about the candle and the Renbys and the mummers. But, you know, I think her point about the Christmas decorations is really true, you know, that Christmas doesn't end after Christmas Day, that it ends on the 6th of January with Nulig Naman or Little Christmas or Women's Christmas, as it's known in Ireland.
Yes, I agree with Paula. Very much Little Christmas was a big day in our calendar. And in fact, my mother always cooked another turkey on Little Christmas. It was a holy day at that stage. And it was when the wise men came to visit Jesus in the stable and brought him the gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh. So obviously coming up in a Catholic faith, that was a very big part of our feast days. And my mother always celebrated Little Christmas. And the amazing thing about it was she died on Little Christmas Day, and she always had a special feast on Little Christmas Day and made a big thing of it in our house.
Lovely. Yeah, no, I think, you know, Paula made a very good point about Christmas decorations going up a lot earlier in the UK, but I think Ireland has probably gone a little bit like that now as well. Decorations tend to go up very early, and we've probably lost it's probably aligned with the kind of decline of faith in Ireland and the rise of secularism, and that the decorations go up early, and that, you know, because there's those important aspects of Nulig Naman and Little Christmas and the wise men coming on the 6th of January. And I really think that's certainly was, I remember when I was growing up anyway, that you and Dad, you'd always be reluctant to put up the decorations, and even still are reluctant to put up the decorations too early. So it feels like that's something that's ingrained in your generation.
Yeah, but I think it was practical purposes as well. I genuinely do, because if you're living on a farm where you have reared a number of turkeys and they have to be prepared and sold and whatever, and then the house has to be cleaned after all the plucking and all the rest goes on. So therefore, it wouldn't be practical to put them up too early, but definitely they never came down until after the 6th of January. That was definitely, it was the 12 days of Christmas, basically.
No, absolutely. That's lovely. And I think they're important elements of Christmas to acknowledge. You were talking about your Auntie Sheila and her experience of Christmas in the 30s. And I wonder, do you think Christmas has changed much since those times and since you were a child in the 1950s?
I think things got probably a little bit more plentiful in the 1950s. But I think the 30s, 40s and 50s were similar. It was very much community, were tight-knit communities, and people celebrated. And obviously, I still remember getting the cake and the piece of roast or whatever you got as a goodwill gesture. That continued into the 50s and 60s as well. But I think it was the era of electricity that really brought us into from the steam age to the jet age, as it were. And I think that that made a huge difference.
Absolutely. And I suppose with the change in how we buy and purchase and the availability of products and the availability of credit to buy products has changed the way we experience Christmas, at least at a superficial level. I'd be interested to hear what some of our guests have to say. And Michael, Paula and Patrick, or Saki O'Brien, as he's known affectionately around our area, have to say about that. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be brilliant, James. I'd love to hear it.
Well, it's changed, as I said, because it's all Christmas. It's all Christmas now. Like, that's the big change. Which, as I said, you can have your turkey in midsummer now, and you'll be a goose if you want it. And kids gets ties nearly every day, and when it comes to Christmas, it's not new for them. Other than, as your man said, if this tie comes in a big box, it's the box that they get more pleasure out of now, pulling one around and hiding in the box and all this sort of carrying. Yeah. Ah, yeah. Anyway, so look at that's progress, that's change, and you have to go with it. And if you didn't, you'd stagnate and you're going nowhere, isn't that it?
I don't know. I think, like, in many ways, it's the same. I think the basic stuff, I think, is the same. Definitely, like, I suppose the consumerism has mounted since when we were small. I suppose there's pressure on people, isn't there, about, and maybe that was there when we were small as well. I remember, like, we were encouraged to, you know, ask Santa for a surprise and kind of keep it loose. Whereas I know kind of now there's maybe, like, you know, certain expectations for Christmas or whatever. And I suppose parents or families just manage that differently, maybe, in terms of kind of how they deal with it. But I think it's probably, for me, I think it's pretty much the same as it was, to be honest. Apart from that, maybe the consumerism.
What is like everything else, you have to go with the times.
Yes.
You know, people have more money now, and they can't, like, because there's nothing as a small present now, it's either a big one or a narrow one.
I know, that's the truth. Very good. So that's it. You think Christmas has changed? Or you think it hasn't changed that much, though, you're saying?
What?
Do you think it has changed a lot, or do you think it hasn't changed that much? Do you think it's...
No. I wouldn't say it didn't. No.
Still there's the
old... I wouldn't, because everything... Years and years ago, like, just everything was... people made sure they had their goose and had their turkey and they reared them, and that was it.
Yes.
You know, now that that's not in the mind at all, they go into the supermarket or the market and go and get them, and that's it.
So anyway, Sheila, I think there's some really good points there. I think the consumerism is a big thing, but I in my own opinion, and although I haven't been around long enough to have experienced Christmas in the way you have or anyone else, or some of our other guests have, but I do think consumerism is probably the big thing that's changed about Christmas. But fundamentally, I think it's still about family, and it's about being with the people we love and reflecting and being grateful for all of those things. So that's certainly my point of view on it anyway.
Yeah, and I thoroughly agree with you. It's all about family and we all love it. And I know every year when I sit down at the table, the one thing I always say is Go merrimi bio eranam saharish agus le kela le kunav day, which means may we all be alive this time next year and together. And I think that that's, you know, is a lovely little Irish saying. But I know that, you know, there were times when people couldn't be together. For example, My grandmother, she was a shop assistant in Tullough, County Carlow, and she came from Glasson outside Athlone. And she wasn't able to get home for Christmas. And I know in 1923, she was sending her Christmas cards, and she had sent all her Christmas cards and she had one left. And that year, my grandfather had gone to Tullough as a young guard, and he was promoted to sergeant and he went to East Galway. Now, he had his eye on my grandmother, but she resisted for some reason. She didn't go out with them, but she'd one card left and she sent that card to my grandfather. And sure, I wouldn't be here at all if that card hadn't gone. So it's great that she did send the card, because they were married the following June. And it just shows you, like, people weren't even able to get home for Christmas then. So they had to make the most of their circumstances. The transport infrastructure wasn't there at the time. So therefore, they just had to stay put.
Absolutely. Well, I wouldn't be here either, only for that Christmas card. So it's a lovely story to finish the episode. And I believe you have a poem which you're going to see us out with.
Yeah, I usually finish with a quote or a poem, and on this occasion, I think Christmas warrants a poem. Okay,
perfect. So
okay, it's called An Irish Christmas Night. Oh, let me tear aside the veil that curtains of the years. Oh, let me cast away life's dower of sadness and of tears, and find again the peace and the joy that used to shine so bright when as a child I revelled in an Irish Christmas night. Oh, let me see my whitewashed home beside the country lane, the holly glistening on the wall, a candle in the pane. Oh, let me glimpse those eyes that shone with rapture and delight when round a blazing fire of turf we sat on Christmas night. Oh, let me hear the tales once told, the laughter that used ring, the jokes and the banter we would frame, the songs we loved to sing. Oh, let me feel a mother's love embrace me in its light, as once it did long, long ago upon a Christmas night. Oh, far my feet have roamed since then, and much my eyes have scanned. I've glimpsed the finest structures the mind of men have planned. But all the glory earth can claim, its splendour and its might, seems small in view to one who knew an Irish Christmas night.
That was beautiful, Sheila.
Thanks, James. Happy Christmas to all our listeners, and I hope it'll be a great year 2021 for you all.
And I would like to relay those comments. Happy Christmas, everybody, and thanks for listening to The Hut Near the Bog. We really appreciate your listenership, and have a great year, and happy Christmas, Sheila. Love you.
And I love you too, James, and happy Christmas. Take care of yourself.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.